Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Tashurunmulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sita Tanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamaya Tadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Atita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we have people here that I've known over 50 years, people I've met just this year. But what's nice about the gathering is that it's a community. You can have so many people together, but if they don't have common interest, it's not a community, it's a crowd. And community is very important for bhakti. It doesn't mean huge numbers. It just means Vaishnavas that get together with common interest, because it allows one to transcend the limited concept of I. The limited concept of I is I'm the center. And therefore kind of overcome the consciousness that prevents bhakti from flowing. And the consciousness that prevents bhakti from growing is, I am the center, I am the controller, and I am the enjoyer. So these community events, I'm going to give a message, but as Marshall McLuhan said, anybody, who knows who Marshall McLuhan was?
Media is the
message. Yeah, of course, you're my age. So just the event itself, what to speak of the content, just the event of Vaishnavas getting together, Vaishnava society. One time a godbrother of mine, Garuda Prabhu, was a professor. He was in Harvard and he was in the university. And a distinguished professor was giving a lecture, and he was just kind of a new man. And the professor said, there is no such thing in the Vedic literatures of a Vaishnav community. So he was just thinking, I can't let this sit. But he had to do it in a tactful way. And then he said, can you explain the verse? What is it? Machita matkata prana bodhiyantas parasparam. That my devotees, they gather together. Machita, that is their consciousness. Matprana, that is their life. Bodhiyantas parasparam. And they exchange. And then there is blessings by God. There's that verse, Srinvata swakata krishna punya shravana kirtana. Hidyantastoya bhadrani vidinoti saritsitam. That when you gather together without ego, without inhibition, without attachment, what's my favorite verse there? I can't remember it now. It's the verse that shows the essence of the Bhagavatam. Anyway, when one gets together, it's pleasing. Just like a father, you know, when the family members get along, when they do things together, there's some kind of blessings. So generally we hold these functions and we feel some kind of blessings. And the real blessings is not the things you get, but the consciousness you have. And it's kind of important, because that consciousness that you get, that becomes your faith. And faith means your goal. And it gives you the right goal. And the right goal is that feeling. Not just on a special day, not just on a time of the day, but actually achieving that consciousness one day. You know, so that's why we're here, because Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Beej, wandering from universe to universe, species of life to species of life, and by the mercy of Krishna and those who represent him, we get this Bhakti Lata Beej, this faith. And it's not just theoretical, it's experience. Faith means trust by experience. Because we've had that experience, therefore we meet the goal. We go forward with the goal, despite the challenges. Right at the beginning, we tell you, chant and be happy. We don't tell you the distance between chant and be happy. That's like the secret. Except for Jamuna Jaya. So, anyway, it's great to have these events. Now, you know, this morning, I got up exceptionally early. I went to bed even a little bit earlier. And I was refreshed, and it was midnight. And I started writing the next Monday morning greetings, a commentary on the Lakota Code of Ethics. But just, you know, trying to find, you know what to say also. Because it's a big moment. Anybody here have any phobias? Okay, a few people. Things that irrationally you don't like, whether they're good or bad. When I grew up, at the age of 6, my family moved from Bensonhurst. Sometimes I use my British Oxford accent. From Bensonhurst, they moved to Canarsie. And it was just building. So in my backyard, there were just these sand dunes. And I was playing one day, and I got bit by a dog. So that creates a samskara, you know, against something. So we have things. So I don't, you know, if I walk down the street and there's like a little dog barking, I don't know if I should turn around. Should I act tough? Should I, you know, should I transcend? So we all have our phobias, and there's two challenges I always have at Vyas Puja. You know, I'm a connoisseur of programs. Other things I'm not a connoisseur of, like food within parameters, anything. Clothes, you know, these shiny silks, I never would have worn them. But someone gave me a gift last year, said, can I get, I want to buy you some clothes. Here, they got me some clothes. I never took it out of the box. I said, Kaveri, take it back. I'll use it in my Vyas Puja. And it was the only set I had. And then I said, oh my God, these starched, shiny silks. It's like so not me. There's two things. There's two things, and one is for me, but I'm a connoisseur of programs, And I'm a, and that means every single person's mind here. And they have to be happy. So I got this tremendous, you know, like that. And the second one is, I'm a connoisseur of communication. And it's a moment for me. I consider these moments, it's like if I preach in a yoga studio, it's a moment, those people are coming. And if I'm not clear in my communication, so those are the kind of two pressures I have. The programs are always well organized. I don't go in the kitchen anymore to check on things. They throw me out anyway. But the communication, so this morning, you know, to find, you know, what will I talk about? You know, so basically, in bhakti, it's two things. It's the ability you have, but it's how Krishna uses them. And if Krishna doesn't use them, it doesn't matter what your ability is. And when you do things in spiritual life, what you actually realize is you actually see Krishna reciprocating with one. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhiyogam tvam yena mam upa. One who worships me with faith and devotion, I give them the knowledge. So I did a lot of chanting and a lot, and then I was working on a commentary on the Lakota Code of Ethics. And I'm going to explain the first one and then tell you the realization that I had for what I'm going to talk about. Okay? You have to, at the beginning, kind of talk about to get people interested. You can't just start with, you know, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. You got to draw people in a little bit. So this was the first one. Rise with the sun to pray. Pray alone. Pray often. The Great Spirit will listen if you only speak. Commentary. Rise with the sun to pray. According to Vedic calculations, the 24-hour day is better divided into 36 muhurtas, or 48-minute periods that reflect the different effects that different parts of the day have on consciousness. The early morning around sunrise, especially the Brahma Muhurta, the 48 minutes before sunrise, have by far the greatest impact on the mind for peace and concentration. Serious spiritual practitioners take avail of those hours to deepen their spiritual life. Pray alone. For meditation, we need a time and place reserved exclusively for Krishna, where we sit alone, separated from all of life's responsibilities. That place is called our asana, literally a place to sit for exclusive concentration. When the mind does become focused, asana becomes upasana, which literally means to sit near. Upa means to sit near. This conventionally implies worshiping or serving, as one has to be present near the object of worship to do so, not just physically, but in the mind. Without that type of regulation, where worship can be exclusive, our mind will be divided between the object of worship and our responsibilities and attachments. Yoga or meditation will not take place. Pray often. This is my own commentary on the Lakota Code here. To get true realization, our thoughts need not only be concentrated and without interruption, but they have to be prolonged. Quote, practice becomes firmly established when it has been cultivated uninterruptedly and with devotion over a prolonged period of time. Yoga Sutras 114. The Great Spirit will listen only if you speak. Quote, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So Bhagavad Gita 10:10. So that was just the first commentary on it, the first comment on it. But here was my realization. My realization was, is that, because what I wanted to show, and you'll see when I wrote, is there's a universality of truth. There, it's not, religion is not a particular faith historically, geographically. It's the nature of God, the nature of the soul to love God, and those activities and behaviors that bring us closer to that. So it's not confined to history. So there's a universality of it. And my realization, and this is what I wanted to share with you today, my realization is therefore, there's embodied knowledge, not created by us intellectually or not historically. There's knowledge that actually exists, independent of us. And that's called Veda. Veda means knowledge. It's not just the book. It's where that knowledge is found. And that kind of determines and defines everything and what everything's relationship. Actually, this universe has a theme. And what a theme is the one idea that connects everything else, even though apparently unrelated. Every book has a theme. If you want to be a good writer, I'll teach you a technique. After you write your essay, you say, so what, after every paragraph. And if you can't answer, so what, and answer how that's connected to your theme. No matter how intellectual, no matter how beautiful it is, it's got to go. And same thing with a class. It has to have a theme. Sometimes there's so many good ideas in a class, but it really, they're not connected. And therefore, they don't individually have dynamicism. So what's the theme of this world? There's so many things that are happening in this world. They appear unrelated, but what is the theme of this world? And the theme of this world is the liberation, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everything coming to us is for us. It's for liberation. There's a theme. So this embodied knowledge, you have to really, really think carefully. What is your relationship to it? What does it mean in your life? That's why the term guru in Sanskrit means heavy. Why does guru mean heavy? Guru means heavy because knowledge is heavy. Truth is heavy. It's so difficult to face the truth. And if you think that it's not difficult, just remember the last time someone told you you're wrong and how you reacted. When truth actually told, truth is so, it's so difficult. It's so courageous to say, I am going to live my life by truth. It's so courageous. What does that mean? Go in your hearts right now. And it's really subtle because the basic misconception, the first misconception people have is, oh my God, I have to give up everything. But that's not what truth means. Truth, attachments are also truth. There's a truth, don't give up your attachment too. That's also a truth. That's the basic misconception in spiritual life that Arjuna had. He thought, oh my God, now I'm in trouble, now I'm in anxiety, now I have to embrace the truth. Now I have to leave what I'm doing. No. But truth is heavy. Because what truth does, or may do, It may tell you that things that you like, you shouldn't have. And things that you don't like, you should have. And that's basically what spiritual life is, such a challenge. And sometimes I give a when I go to, you know, a yoga studio and people are not familiar with it, and I just try to figure out now, you know, what am I going to tell them? Okay, I'll tell them how I came to Krishna consciousness. And it begins in your last life, basically. But how do you come? You come when somehow or other there's some tiny shift in the consciousness. I describe it like this. There's a soul, and he's covered by a cloud of ignorance, and there's the Son of God. The Son is the Son of God? Wait. Some Freudian slip you could figure out later. I don't know what that one was. There's a Son and God. Okay. There's a Son and God. So it's such a phenomenon that even though the Son may be so nourishing, vitamin D, and give you warmth, and you know, but if there's a cloud, you can't experience. And the cloud is so tiny, but it prevents you from accessing this very powerful thing. So what's more powerful than God? But the cloud of ignorance can prevent us from actually experiencing it. So what is that ignorance? The ignorance is our faith or our goal or our conception that happiness is enjoying and controlling the world. And what happens in our life, time after time after time after time after, it doesn't work. I know my mother, she'll be coming here, 98 years old. I'm amazed she'll be able to come, honestly. And she was speaking to someone, right? And the person was going to a psychiatrist for like 40 years, right? And my mother says, "You're going through it for 40 years. It doesn't work." And you want to hear the funny part now? She said, "Well, why don't you try my son?" So it doesn't work. We tried the same thing over and over again, and it just doesn't work. And we're so expert this way and that way, and then we create philosophies to justify it, because in the philosophy of enjoyment, sense pleasure cannot be interrupted by guilt. So therefore, there's philosophies that support what we do, and we defend them. And therefore, when someone gives you the truth, they're not only attacking your philosophy, they're attacking your enjoyment. So how much courage does it take to embrace the truth? Next year, 70 years old, 50th birthday in Krishna consciousness, and that's the thing always. It's right there. Chant and go deeper, chant and go deeper, chant and go deeper, chant and go deeper, chant and not go deeper, chant and not go deeper. Surrender. That too. So it takes like a courage. And what are the great souls? The great souls are the people with that courage. And again, it doesn't mean renunciation. It means to do what God wants. And the great people, if we look at Prabhupada's life, he was just completely surrendered to the truth. Actually, he said his inspiration for coming to the West and doing what he did was the verse, Vivasayat Mika Budhya, aka Kuru Nandana, you know, that one should be resolute in determination, and therefore one should accept the teachings of the lineage as one's life and soul. And that's what Prabhupada did. That's what Prabhupada did. So embodied knowledge, where is embodied knowledge? How do you understand embodied knowledge? Embodied knowledge comes in the Shastra, the sacred teachings. It's manifest with the universe. And it, you know, you see the universality of truth, like the Bible. The first element in the Bible of creation is sound. And also in the Bhagavatam, the most subtle thing is sound. Because you can only hear sound. You cannot feel, touch, smell. The other, as you get, like when you get to the manifestation of earth, the most gross manifestation of the material world, then you can smell it, you can touch it, you can hear it. So in the Bible, God said, let there be light. So it's the sound that creates the universe. And with the sound comes the Vedas. It comes the knowledge of the universe. So what happens in that soul when he goes again and again and again and again and again. I'm saying it because I'm looking at my life even now. Again and again and again and again. Then somehow or other you get the realization it doesn't work. That's called humility. It doesn't work. My opinions are not absolute. I am not the authority. My desires are not absolute. They're not the authority. And then what happens there is in the cloud of ignorance, a little space opens up. And what happens is God sees that space. God sees that space and then sends Prabhupada to America, sends the sadhus, sends the saintly people. So what I wanted to do in one sense, I looked at my clock, 1:08, how auspicious. What I wanted to do in one sense is explain what am I doing up here? Right? What am I doing up here? I did that. That's one of the things. You know, what am I doing up here? Why is there worship? Right? A seat, a higher seat. There'll be flowers. Those of you who haven't been here, it's quite spectacular. The garlands start coming in, and it's just an amazing function. But why? That's really one of the things I want to explain, is why. Because in a proper culture, there is respect for knowledge. In a proper culture, there actually are people who represent it. In every relationship. So see what's happening in modern society, right? And therefore, in a proper society where people properly represent this term authority, it's got a bad rap, but there's a reason it's got bad rap, because right now it just represents a position that exploits you, not knowledge that can enlighten you. So why the respect? Why the respect? Because there's a science of relationship. And you need faith to learn. Faith is the precursor of knowledge. Because without faith, you can't go beyond your limited frame of reference. And if anyone has a teacher in any field of knowledge, you have to have faith. Because they're going to explain certain things to you through your limited frame of reference that expand your frame of reference and give you further knowledge. So there has to be respect. And that's what's such a shame in the modern society. And it's predicted in the Gita, it's predicted in the Bhagavatam, because people in positions of authority don't represent it properly, people lose faith. But then what happens? It also closes the heart when there is proper knowledge. So that society, you know, in the Bhagavatam, I had a friend who's a great Sanskrit scholar, and he gave me this translation of a book in Sanskrit that never before was translated into English. It's a famous book because I borrowed it to Raghunath and told him to be very careful. And he fell asleep and the monkeys ripped it to pieces. But it's with tape and everything. It's with tape and everything here. I got most of it back, but it's a famous book. And, you know, they had a commentary in that book on a verse which we use properly that the guru or the teacher should be seen as God. You know, but within parameters. But when I saw the commentary and the verses that followed, it was just talking about a proper society where maturity didn't mean a greater ability to control and enjoy the world. Maturity meant a greater application of knowledge and a development of wisdom. So they would. So it says, Acharya mam vijanaya navamanyete. You should worship the Acharya as Krishna says, as my very self. Don't envy him, of course. Why don't envy? You always envy authority. Why? Because what authority means, right? Any teenagers here? Or those people who still haven't matured? What does authority mean? Authority means a restriction on your whims. So, Acharya, who is the Acharya? It was the parents, it was the head of the government, it was the spouse, it was the teacher. You know, I had this when I in India, when I first worked in the school, Prabhupada made this one man the principal. And believe it or not, he wasn't even a Vaishnava. He actually had an impersonal viewpoint. Prabhupada made him the. And he was such an amazing man. You can't believe. He was a master yogi. He had an MA in Sanskrit, a PhD in Hindi. He was a master artist, millionaire businessman, and had a master's in filmmaking in 1950 from the University of Southern California. So he described to me what it was like. You know, they have these, the teacher comes in. The teacher comes in and, you know, the guy's got his hand, you know, around his girlfriend's shoulders and his feet, you know, on the thing. And he would stand up and fold his hands. When Tamal Krishna Maharaj went to the university, you know, after so many years, he had a professor who was his guide. He would hold the professor's books and take him to the next classroom. there's certain culture of learning. So worship helps develop faith, and faith is so much needed, but not in an artificial way. Now you can see the pressure on me, because I have to now represent that. And I have to sit up here, as I was told by one mentor in the very early days. He said, should I do this service? And he told me, yes. He says, but don't think you're a guru. Do it as a service. A service. And what the Vyasa Puja is, and I learned this in India. I feel very fortunate to have grown up in India in spiritual life. Especially, you know, I came to India like over 45 years ago. And to see people who represented the culture. And how they, certain things, it's so nice to see people embody the culture and you know, what you learn. And to see, and therefore, I asked about, you know, this Vyasa Puja. And what is Vyasa Puja? Puja, Vyas means the editor of the Vedas. Vyas is an incarnation of God. It can be a person who is empowered by God to edit. And what does edit mean? Edit means communicate. So Vyasadev means there are teachings that are realized and communicated. And we know how difficult communication is. Because what communication entails, and I've said this many times, is you have to realize something deeply enough so that you can conform it to the language and understanding of your audience without losing the initial message. And we know how we suffer from a lack of realization if things are kept in a form which doesn't speak our language, then a very beautiful thing will look so stale and fundamental and so many other things. And if it's not, and then we have the other thing where the form is changed to communicate things, but you lose the essence. You lose the roots, you lose the power. So what Vyas is, he is the realized editor of the Vedas. He made them accessible. The whole story is there. So Vyasa Puja means the lineage. Like in the Yoga Sutras, it says what? Atta Yoga Anashasanam. Right now, I'm going to give you the teachings of yoga. Patanjali never said, right? Now I'm going to give you what I realize, what my ideas. Pradyumna Prabhu, he spoke on this at our Bhakti immersion a little bit. It was very interesting. He said there's two paramparas, guru parampara, under parampara. Under means blind. So he says, blind means what? Blind means, let's say there's a ball and it's a red ball. You could kind of feel around it and say, okay, you know, this is what it's like, but you can't have the full understanding. And that's our problem. So the full understanding is not communicated. So that's our problem. And this is the real challenge we have. That there is knowledge. There is knowledge that's communicated. And on our own, we're limited. And again, I stress two things that are so important. Faithfulness and thoughtfulness. If you're not faithful, you're limited to your own frame of reference. If you're not thoughtful, you won't catch that you're filtering the truth through your own limited frame of reference. And therefore, blindly, you're accepting things that's not true in the name of authority. So it's such a process. So this is what this is about. not worshiping just the teacher's worshiping the lineage. And that's the essence of human existence, is the sincerity to want truth. That's the essence. Because without knowledge, what happens? I mean, I reflect, you know, myself. I kind of tell this story about my late father. You know, initially he was not so happy. And then, you know, and there were good reasons why he was not happy. Because it takes time to assimilate knowledge. And when you get realization initially, the tendency is to make it a passion. And what is a passion? A passion is a truth that's overextended where it doesn't belong. Like renunciation is a truth. Yeah, renunciate. Yeah, I'm not the body. I'm not the body. Goodbye, dear. My kids, my family. Tehenos min yatade hey komaran yovanam jara tatade hantara praptir. As the embodied soul passes from boyhood to childhood to youth to old age, simply the time of death, and then quote the verses from the fifth canto, the forest of material enjoyment, and the wife is the witch, and this is this, and you got the whole thing. So it has to be assimilated. So naturally, but my father, after a while, as I started assimilating the knowledge, I think they had every right to be alarmed. But as I began to assimilate the knowledge, and then I'd bring over to the house different people who were, Borijan came one time, and this person, and they started talking. And my father said, I hate it. I said, what's wrong? He says, I think I'm getting sucked in. So then one day he said to me, I have three sons, and you're the only son with his head screwed on right. And then I started to reflect on that. What was the difference? The difference is knowledge. The difference is the knowledge that I got. Real knowledge, embodied knowledge. Okay, it takes time to assimilate it. You may misunderstand it. You may see people misapply it. There's so many things, but somehow or other, with all my mistakes, I had knowledge to work with. I had knowledge to apply. From bad judgment comes experience. And from experience comes good judgment. But somehow or other, to be connected in that way and have that knowledge and then have the ability to surrender to knowledge. That's what a person of character is. If anybody you respect, it's not a person who's ignorant and it's not a person who's whimsical. You respect people that have knowledge. And that means they're thoughtful. You have to be thoughtful. You have to think about it. In the Upanishads, it says you hear the truth. If someone's speaking according to your frame of reference in your language, through your frame of reference, expands your frame of reference, you don't. When you hear it, it sounds true. You haven't really realized it yet. You think about it, and then you apply it. You apply that. Instead of the way you just see. We all have that experience. Are we going to act just the way we see? Imagine if people just acted the way they, what they really thought. Oh, there's that girl. That would make me so happy. That's the goal of life. Well, she's married. There's so many things. You just don't know. What I want is not necessarily the truth. That's not the truth. That's not going to make me happy. Violating Dharma, doing things that are wrong. No, this is the truth. And when you apply that enough times, when you apply it enough times, then you actually begin to see the truth. So we are honoring embodied knowledge, not this nonsense that knowledge is something that's kind of evolving, you know, that we discover things new that haven't existed before. It's not true. The application may be original. There may be a new circumstance where it has to be applied. So this is really what we're doing here. We're honoring the embodied knowledge. We're honoring the lineage, and done in the appropriate way. Because in relationship, and one thing that's so profound in the Vedic knowledge is relationship. The whole Krishna book, the whole Bhagavatam is about what is perfect relationship, because that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to have a perfect relationship, because the ultimate goal is love, and love manifests in perfect relationship. And the perfect object of love is eternal, it's God. So that's our goal, to develop that, to develop perfect relationship. And we need to have some understanding. Otherwise, we'll miss it. So, why didn't I think of a slam bang ending to like punch it out there? But I didn't have it. So, we'll go. I guess, you know, now the that respect and honor is given, which I accept on behalf of the parampara, and then there's a worship. And ultimately, I just make one point here. Bhakti is devotion. Devotion means to offer the best. And therefore, in bhakti, there's a lot of flowers and there's a lot of food. And we'll honor it that way. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.